so long. Cheer my ham bonies. Cheer my ham bonies. Gonna spoil. Cheer my ham bonies. Gonna spoil. Train's running. Train's running. One be going my way. Going my way.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
To the survivors in the room, if you are willing, please stand. And if you are willing, please raise your hands if you have still not been able to meet with this Department of Justice. Please know for the record that every single survivor has raised their hand.
At a highly contentious congressional hearing, Attorney General Pam Bondi refuses to apologize for the Justice Department treatment of Epstein's survivors. We'll speak to two House members who sparred with Bondi, Pramila Jayapal of Washington and Becky Ballant of Vermont. Ballant walked out of the hearing after Bondi accused her of being anti-Semitic. Ballant's grandfather was killed in the Holocaust. But first, we look at President Trump's meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and speak to the acclaimed Iranian director Jafar Panahi. Iranian authorities have arrested Mehdi Mahmoudian, who was just nominated for an Oscar for co-writing the screenplay of Panahi's film, It Was Just an Accident.
Following the massacre, 17 of us published a statement. And in that statement, we held Ayatollah Khamenei responsible for what had happened. Mehdi Mahmoudian was also one of the co-signers of that statement, and it was because of that that they arrested him.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. On Capitol Hill, Democratic lawmakers grilled Attorney General Pam Bondi on the Justice Department handling of the Epstein files. Democratic Congressmember Pramila Jayapal asked survivors who are sitting in the audience to stand up before she challenged Bondi to apologize to them for the Justice Department failure to fully redact their names in the Epstein files. Bondi declined. Throughout the hearing, she insulted Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee and heaped praise on President Trump as she repeatedly dodged accusations she's perpetuating a cover-up and ignoring the victims. This is part of an exchange between Bondi and New York Democratic Congressman member Jerry Nadler.
So I really have just one question for you. How many of Epstein's co-conspirators have you indicted? How many perpetrators are you even investigating?
First,
How many have you indicted?
Excuse me. I'm going to answer the question.
Answer my question.
No, I'm going to answer the question the way I want to answer the question.
No, you're going to answer the question
ridiculous.
The way I asked it.
Chairman Jordan, I'm not going to get in the gutter with these people,
how many
but I'm going to answer the question.
How many?
A Reuters photographer at the hearing captured images of Attorney General Bondi with a printout of Congressmember Jayapal's history of searches of the Justice Department's database of the Epstein files, which was just open to Congress members to review. Congressmember Jayapal blasted Bondi on social media, writing, quote, It's totally inappropriate and against the separations of powers for the DOJ to surveil us as we search the Epstein files. Bondi showed up today with a burn book that held a printed search history of exactly what emails I searched. That is outrageous, and I intend to pursue this and stop this spying on members, unquote. We'll speak with Congressmember Jayapal later in the broadcast, as well as Vermont Congressmember Becca Vallant. She walked out of the hearing after Bondi accused her of being anti-Semitic. Congressmember Vallant's grandfather died in the Holocaust. President Trump held a private meeting at the White House for nearly 3 hours on Wednesday with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. After the discussions, Trump said nothing definitive had been decided. His visit came just days after U.S. and Iranian officials held indirect talks in Oman amidst Trump's persistent threats to once again bomb Iran. It was Netanyahu's sixth trip to the United States since Trump retook the White House just over a year ago. We'll have more on Netanyahu's visit after headlines with Middle East analyst Muin Rabbani. We'll talk about Iran, about Israel, about the occupied territories. Israeli President Isaac Herzog has wrapped up a four-day visit to Australia, where he was met by widespread protests. Thousands of demonstrators gathered in Melbourne today, following protest marches in the capital Canberra and Sydney. Protester Greg Hunt said Herzog was the wrong person to provide comfort to Australia's Jewish community after a pair of gunmen opened fire on Hanukkah celebration last December, killing 15 people.
I understand the idea of giving comfort to an Israeli people after the atrocity that they suffered at Bondi, but that doesn't excuse an invitation to someone who, as I've got on the sign here, a sign of bomb to drop on Gazans. That's just beyond the pale. Elbow should have known better. He really should have.
In Pennsylvania, masked federal agents forced their way into a home in Eagleville on Monday, terrorizing a family sleeping inside that included two children aged 8 and 13. Lupe Lopez, who lives at the home, recorded video as the agents battered down her door. The video shows Lopez was held at gunpoint as the masked agents search for her 26-year-old cousin, a Mexican national with an expired visa. Lopez appealed to the agents to leave her home.
Why do you do this? Why do you break my families apart? Why? You don't have kids? You don't have a family? Why do you do this? Do you think this is okay? I know you feel something.
In Minnesota, St. Paul Mayor Kali Herr has renewed her call for an end to Operation Metro Surge and for over 2,000 federal agents to leave the Twin Cities after a car crash involving federal agents Wednesday sent one person to the hospital and damaged several vehicles. Meanwhile, human rights lawyers who visited the Whipple Federal Building in Minneapolis said immigrants jailed there are continuing to be denied access to legal counsel. In court declarations filed Wednesday, the lawyers said people arrested by ICE were provided with the wrong phone numbers for legal services and that ICE agents gave no privacy to people calling lawyers in violation of attorney-client privilege. Here in New York, ICE acknowledged in federal court this week that it's been jailing immigrants on a second previously undisclosed floor at 26 Federal Plaza in Manhattan. The disclosure came after a judge last summer ordered the Trump administration to address squalid, unsanitary conditions and prolonged confinement in overcrowded rooms at 26 Federal Plaza, not designed for overnight stays. New body cam footage and emails have been released, revealing new details about how a federal immigration agent shot U.S. citizen Marimar Martinez 5 times in Chicago last October. The footage shows Border Patrol agents in their vehicle with weapons drawn and fingers on the triggers, as Martinez can be heard honking her car's horn in the background to alert neighbors about the presence of federal agents.
All right, it's time to get aggressive and get the f*** out.
Shortly after the incident, Gregory Bovino, who was leading the Trump administration's mass deportation campaign at the time, emailed the agent, quote, "In light of your excellent service in Chicago, you have much yet left to do," exclamation point twice. Martinez's attorneys said Wednesday they'll seek tens of millions of dollars in damages under the Federal Tort Claims Act. The Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, abruptly closed the airspace around El Paso, Texas, late Tuesday and reopened it hours later after Customs and Border Protection officials reportedly fired an anti-drone laser shared by the Pentagon without providing FAA officials enough time to manage the risks to commercial flights. According to the New York Times, immigration officials thought they were targeting a drug cartel drone, but it turned out to be a party balloon. Democratic Senator Jack Reed, who sits on the Armed Services Committee, said, quote, "The conflicting accounts coming from different parts of the federal government only deepen public concern and raise serious questions about coordination and decision making," unquote. The House of Representatives has approved a bill that seeks to repeal President Trump's declaration of a national emergency to impose punitive tariffs on Canada. 6 Republicans join nearly all Democrats in supporting the resolution, which appears to have enough support to pass the Senate. President Trump signaled he's prepared to veto the bill and plans to punish defectors. Trump wrote on social media, quote, "Any Republican in the House or the Senate that votes against tariffs will seriously suffer the consequences come election time, and that includes primaries," Trump wrote. President Trump accepted the Washington Coal Club's inaugural award on Wednesday, declaring him the, quote, "undisputed champion of beautiful, clean coal," unquote. Trump accepted the award, a statue of a coal miner from Peabody Energy president and CEO Jim Gretsch, during a White House event where Trump announced he directed the Pentagon to purchase electricity from coal-fired plants and said he'd asked the Energy Department to provide $175 million in federal funds for upgrades at several U.S. coal plants.
"I've saved 74 coal power plants from crushing restrictions and closures that would have been forced to shut down in the very immediate future. And today I'm proud to announce that the Tennessee Valley Authority has taken action to save 2 major coal plants in Tennessee, Tennessee Valley Authority."
In response, the Natural Resources Defense Council wrote, quote, "While Americans are demanding clean, affordable energy, the Trump administration's using our tax dollars to prop up the nation's dirtiest, least efficient power plants. It's no wonder fossil fuel lobbyists are handing Trump an award today," unquote. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has fired program manager Alexis Goldstein for documenting a meeting last year between the agency and Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. That's according to emails obtained by Bloomberg News. In a statement to Bloomberg, Goldstein said, quote, "CFPB is illegally retaliating against me for trying to do my job. I acted to protect the sensitive data of Americans and the trade secrets of some of the nation's largest banks and financial institutions from being accessed by individuals from DOGE without CFPB credentials and required training," unquote. To see our past interviews with Alexis Goldstein, go to democracynow.org. An Argentina Senate has approved a sweeping new labor bill pushed by far-right President Javier Milei. The bill would curb the right to strike, allow companies to more easily fire people, and curtail severance payments. It comes as thousands of workers mobilized by trade unions gathered in central Buenos Aires, clashing with police on Wednesday. This is Mario Manrique with the Auto Industry Workers Union.
What's being presented as labor modernization is exactly the opposite. This labor reform that the government is proposing is a compilation of all the reforms they've tried to pass in Argentina. And the only thing they're looking for is Argentina to become a cheap labor hub in the world, as unfortunately happens in other regions.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Coming up at a highly contentious congressional hearing, Attorney General Pam Bondi refuses to apologize for the Justice Department's treatment of Jeffrey Epstein's survivors. We'll speak to two House members who sparred with Bondi, Pramila Jayapal of Washington and Becca Ballant of Vermont. Stay with us.
I was dreaming, in my dreaming, where live an aspect bright and fair. In my sleeping, it was broken, but my dream.
By Patti Smith, performing at Democracy Now!'s 20th anniversary. On February 23rd, Democracy Now! Will be celebrating our 30th anniversary at the same historic Riverside Church here in New York City. Among the people who will be performing the jazz legend, we will be speaking with Wynton Marsalis. He will be performing. Also, Michael Stipe, the singer, songwriter, and activist. Hooray for the riffraff. Angela Davis will be joining us, as will Naomi Klein. We'll also hear from the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet, Mousab Aboutoha, and the Nobel Prize laureate will join us, Maria Ressa. That's February 23rd at Riverside Church. For tickets and more information about our 30th anniversary, you can go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. On Capitol Hill, Democratic lawmakers sparred with Attorney General Pam Bondi over the Justice Department's handling of the Epstein files. Bondi repeatedly refused to answer questions and personally attacked the Democrats on the committee. This is part of the exchange between Bondi and Democrat Jerry Nadler.
I really have just one question for you. How many of Epstein's co-conspirators have you indicted? How many perpetrators are you even investigating?
First, you showed it. I find it.
How many have you indicted?
Excuse me. I'm going to answer the question.
Answer my question.
No, I'm going to answer the question the way I want to answer the question.
No, you're going to answer the question
ridiculous.
The way I asked it.
Chairman Jordan, I'm not going to get in the gutter with these people,
how many
but I'm going to answer the question.
How many?
Attorney General Pam Bondi went on to claim the Trump administration has been the most transparent presidency.
This administration released over 3 million pages of documents, over 3 million, and Donald Trump signed that law to release all of those documents. He is the most transparent president in the nation's history. And none of them asked Merrick Garland over the last 4 years one word about Jeffrey Epstein. How ironic is that? You know why? Because Donald Trump The Dow right now is over. The Dow is over $50,000. I don't know why you're laughing. You're a great stock trader, as I hear, Raskin. The Dow is over 50,000 right now. The S&P at almost 7,000. And the NASDAQ smashing records. Americans' 401ks and retirement savings are booming. That's what we should be talking about.
She was talking to New York Congressmember Jerry Nadler, but referred to Raskin, the ranking member of the committee, Jamin Raskin, the congressmember from Maryland. A number of Jeffrey Epstein survivors attended the House hearing. Democratic Congressmember Pramila Jayapal of Washington addressed the survivors during the hearing.
To the survivors in the room, if you are willing, please stand. And if you are willing, please raise your hands if you have still not been able to meet with this Department of Justice. Please know for the record that every single survivor has raised their hand. Attorney General Bondi, you apologized to the survivors in your opening statement for what they went through at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein. Will you turn to them now and apologize for what your Department of Justice has put them through with the absolutely unacceptable release of the Epstein files and their information?
Congresswoman, you sat before Merrick Garland sat in this chair twice.
Attorney General Bondi,
no, can I finish my answer?
No, I'm going to reclaim my time because I asked you a specific question that I would like you to answer, which is, will you turn to the survivors? This is not about anybody that came before you. It is about you taking responsibility for your Department of Justice and the harm that it has done to the survivors who are standing right behind you and are waiting for you to turn to them and apologize for what your Department of Justice has
done. Members get to ask the questions. The witness gets to answer in the way they want to answer. Attorney General,
that's
respond.
Not accurate, Mr. Chairman.
Because she doesn't like the answer. Time. So,
Mr. Chairman,
why
I have asked
didn't she
asked
Merrick Garland this? Twice.
I am reclaiming my time, and when I
will
claim my time, it
I'm
is
Mr. Chairman,
my
the gentleman
time.
Has reclaimed
I'm not going to get in the gutter for her theatrics.
What a massive cover-up this has been and continues to be. Donald Trump made the release of the Epstein files the center of his political campaign because he thought it would benefit him. Then you got into office, Attorney General, claimed to have a client list,
regular
only to
order.
Then say that there was no list. Your deputy, Todd Blanche, met alone with Elaine Maxwell and transferred her to a minimum security prison. And now you continue
the
cover-up, and I wish
expired.
That you would turn around to the survivors who are standing right behind you and on a human level,
Chairman,
apologizes now recognizes the chairman
on what you have done.
Democratic Congressmember Pramila Jayapal questioning Attorney General Pam Bondi. At the hearing, Bondi appeared to have a printout of Congressmember Jayapal's history of searches of the Justice Department's database of the Epstein files, which the Department of Justice just opened to Congress members. Photos from the hearing show Bondi with a black binder that shows the words Jayapal Pramila search history and a list of documents whose members line up with the number of Epstein files. Congressmember Pramila Jayapal joins us now from Washington, D.C. There is so much to talk about here. Why don't you start off with this burn book? What on earth was she looking at that this Reuters photographer caught as you were speaking?
Amy, good morning. It's good to be with you. What she had was a printout of the search history when I went to the Department of Justice annex to look at the supposedly unredacted Epstein files. And in that room where there are only four computers and there were two people monitoring everything we did, they had to log you in. And apparently they logged you in with separate IDs and logins. so that then Pam Bondi could go back and look at exactly what you searched, which is a violation of the separation of powers between the DOJ and Congress, the administration and Congress. And essentially, they were spying on us. She had that printout in her burn book. I don't know how she intended to use it. I don't know if she had it on every member, but I have already begun working on changing the protocol, working with Jamie Raskin and others as well on this, to change the protocol, because the Department of Justice should not be able to spy on us. We should be able to look at those files without anybody knowing what we searched and without that being used against us in some way. It's certainly not going to stop me from continuing to review the files, but it is absolutely outrageous. And it has to stop, and we need a new procedure.
Congressmember Jayapal, can you explain how you actually do search these files? Where do you go? Yeah. What is the scene? Why do they, are they able to track you?
Well, you go to an annex of the Department of Justice, and there's a small room there, and I mean small. There's four computers set up there. You have to get logged in by a Department of Justice person. You have to make an appointment ahead of time. And because there are so many members that want to see those files, you know, sometimes you only get an hour and a half. I actually spent almost 2 hours there. But for each search, it's a huge set of files. And so it's most effective if you search by document number. And that means you have to know what document numbers you're looking for. You can search by keywords, which I also did, but it is much more difficult because if you search by a keyword, you may get, you know, 10,000, 15,000 documents. I will tell you, Amy, that even though those are supposed to be unredacted that we're looking at, only some of the files are unredacted. There are documents that are uploaded perhaps from the FBI that maybe Kash Patel had redacted, maybe the FBI had redacted before that, maybe attorney generals had redacted. The Department of Justice was supposed to unredact those. We are supposed to have access to everything unredacted, but that is not the case. So even when you go into the supposedly unredacted document, you find big redactions. I also tried to access some attachments that looked very important and had lists of co-conspirators. I could not get those attachments. They were not on the email. They were not available to us. And so it's a very painstaking process to search these. And there's also a lot of information we still don't have within the files that have been released, not to mention the 50% of files that still haven't even been released in violation of the law.
And can you explain the question about why co-conspirators were redacted? I mean, you had late night comic Jimmy Kimmel after she said we have the most, you know, every other few minutes she was talking about President Trump being the greatest whatever and the most transparent president in history. And then he asked, Kimmel asked then exactly why was his name taken out, redacted like 1,000 times. That was Trump, that is. But explain who the co-conspirators are. You had Massey, for example, the Republican Congress member, saying why did they redact Lex Wexner's name and exactly who he is, his significance, the former head of Victoria's Secret and Limited.
Yes, that's right. And I started my questioning by putting up two posters behind me. One was an example of a victim list. It was titled Victim List. And there were 32 names on that list. And only one was redacted. And the law requires that all the victims' names are redacted. Clearly, that was not just a mistake where they missed the list. It was titled Epstein Victim List, and one name was redacted. So that was intentional. On the other side, there was an email from a name that was redacted. Actually, it was from Jeffrey Epstein to a name that was redacted. And that one was about a torture video. And that name of a predator was redacted. And so only because members of Congress demanded to unredact that name did we find out that it was a sultan who had ties to Donald Trump's financial businesses and ties to Donald Trump's personal advisor, Steve Bannon. That name was redacted. And so I asked her, how is it that you can have these two violations of the law? And of course, you know, she didn't want to acknowledge it. But that was the moment when I turned to her and asked her to turn to the survivors and apologize, because so much of their personal information was put out there: contact numbers, addresses, names, even nude photographs. And Jane Doe's, who were in the files, who had whose identity had been kept secret for 10, 20 years through these investigations, they were suddenly outed. And you were finding Epstein victims who were explaining to their families for the first time that they were part of this giant sex trafficking ring. So on every level, this was outrageous. But I also think, Amy, that it was intentional. Intentional to not redact survivors' names so that others would feel intimidated, and intentional to redact predators' names because they were trying to protect those powerful interests.
And explain, they've talked about the, you know, retention of these 3 million. They released 3 million. There's about 2.5-3 million pages to go. They've talked about, well, there are investigations underway. But hasn't Blanche, the deputy attorney general, and Bondi said actually they're not investigating anyone? And explain that.
Exactly right. Her deputy attorney general, Todd Blanche, who, by the way, I should remind everybody, is the guy that went to Ghislaine Maxwell, interviewed her on his own, and then facilitated the transfer of Ghislaine Maxwell, who was absolutely a co-conspirator, one of the top, most horrific individuals in this whole sex trafficking scheme. He transferred her to a minimum security prison. He is the one who said that there's nothing in here to prosecute. You know, you can't prosecute somebody just for partying with Epstein. That is not what is in the files. What is very clear is that there are co-conspirators. There's extensive information about those individuals, about their relationships. And this was a giant sex trafficking ring. It was global. There are people from around the world that were part of this. And these were rich, powerful, wealthy people, mostly men, who groomed, raped, abused, manipulated young girls. Sometimes references to young girls as young as 8, 9 years old. It is absolutely disgusting. And they joked about it. I read a lot of emails where they were joking about pedophiles, where they were joking about, you know, the littlest one being the naughty one. I mean, all kinds of horrific things that make your stomach turn and make you realize that even though governments around the world are bringing down princes and ambassadors and maybe even prime ministers here in America, this Department of Justice under Donald Trump and Pam Bondi, his personal attorney, not the people's lawyer, they are not doing the investigations into these predators that need to be done for justice.
Congressmember Giampo, before you go, you founded the nonprofit One America, now the largest immigration advocacy organization in Washington state, before you were a Congress member. I just want to ask you about the whole issue, of course, of ICE surging through the country. You're the ranking member also of the Subcommittee on Immigration, Security, Integrity and Enforcement, spearheaded a letter demanding ICE rescind its July memo denying bond hearings to certain detained immigrants. Explain what you're calling for and the overall picture of what you're confronting today.
Yeah, this has been, one of the issues that I focus the most amount of time on, because what is happening with ICE and CBP being surged and all of the things that DHS is doing to deny people due process, to deny people bond hearings, which is part of due process. And in contravention, by the way, of over 200 judges across the country, including some that were appointed by Donald Trump, saying this violates due process. You cannot just randomly stop people on the street and pull them out of their cars by their hair, not even give them any due process. And this includes U.S. citizens, residents, and people who are here in the process of immigration, and then say that they don't get to have any due process. That's why there are so many habeas petitions being filed in courts across the country. They're jamming up the courts. The judges are ruling and saying you have to release these people, and the Department of Homeland Security is refusing to do that. So that's what the bond letter was about. But on every level, Amy, this is a massive violation of constitutional rights, of the Fourth Amendment to be free of search and seizure, and a massive pipeline into the for-profit detention system, which is really an incarceration system where today, right now, we have 73,000 people every single night being incarcerated in these for-profit facilities. And a tiny percentage, depending on what statistics you look at, anywhere from 5 to maybe at the highest level, 14%, that's ICE's own statistics, have any kind of a violent criminal offense. 85% of people are simply there, in many cases, as the judges are saying, illegally detained with no due process and many other violations of their rights.
We have 30 seconds. You've said ICE and CBP must be fully dismantled. Are you willing to shut down the government over this?
I mean, I think that's what's going to happen tomorrow, because we have said that these are out of control agencies. They don't need to exist. They didn't exist, as you know, prior to 9/11. That's when you and I first met, when I was doing that work. And these are creations that have been funded and funded and funded with zero accountability. And now they're being used as Trump's deportation machine. So, yes, we need to dismantle those agencies completely. In the meantime, because we don't have control of both chambers of government, we need to, at minimum, refuse to fund those agencies anymore without massive reforms. And I don't think we're going to get them. So, yes, I think the government is probably going to shut down around DHS funding, because the American people, Democrat, Republican, and independent, do not like what is happening today and will not stand for it, because this affects all of us. You erode the rights of some group of people, and you erode them for everybody.
Democratic Congressmember Pramila Jayapal of Washington State speaking to us from Washington, D.C. Coming up, we look at President Trump's meeting with the Israeli prime minister and speak to the Iranian filmmaker Jafar Panahi, the Oscar-nominated screenwriter of his new film, has been jailed in Iran. And we'll also speak with Congressmember Becca Balance. She walked out of the hearing with Pam Bondi after Bondi accused her of being anti-Semitic. Congressmember Balance's grandfather died in the Holocaust. Back in 20 seconds.
I was dreaming in my dreaming.
The Power by Patti Smith, joined by musician and activist Michael Stipe at Democracy Now's 20th anniversary. On Monday, February 23rd, Democracy Now! Will be celebrating our 30th anniversary at Riverside Church, again with Michael Stipe, and also Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, Maria Ressa, Wynton Marsalis, the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Masaba Butoha, and more. Check out democracynow.org for tickets and more information. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. President President Trump met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House Wednesday for more than 2.5 hours. The meeting occurred days after U.S. and Iranian officials held talks in Oman over Iran's nuclear program. After meeting with Netanyahu, Trump wrote on social media, "There was nothing definitive reached other than I insisted that negotiations with Iran continue to see whether or not a deal can be consummated. If it can, I let the Prime Minister know that will be a preference," unquote. In recent weeks, Trump's repeatedly threatened to attack Iran after the Iranian government crushed a recent wave of anti-government protests. The U.S.-based human rights activist news agency says the death toll from the recent protests has risen to 7,000. On Wednesday, the Wall Street Journal reported the Pentagon's told a second aircraft carrier strike group to prepare to deploy to the Middle East. To talk about Iran, Israel, Gaza, and more, we're joined by Muin Rabbani, Middle East analyst, non-resident fellow at the Center for Conflict and Humanitarian Studies in Doha, Qatar. Rabbani is a contributor to the book Deluge, Gaza and Israel, From Crisis to Cataclysm. Thanks so much for joining us again, Muin Rabbani. Respond to this meeting. Many were surprised that they didn't come out. Often they hold a news conference, Netanyahu and Trump at the White House. It's been, what, six times that he's been there since Trump retook office. Talk about the significance of this Iran meeting.
Well, it's significant for several reasons. First of all, Netanyahu was initially scheduled to visit Washington next week, but the beginning of a new round of negotiations between the U.S. and Iran set alarm bells ringing in Israel, and he came early. From Israel's perspective, it is not only against any deal with Iran, it is even against negotiations with Iran. And I think what Netanyahu is seeking to do with this visit is to inject poison pills into the negotiations in order to ensure that they fail and thereby set the stage for a new armed conflict with Iran. So far, at least, it doesn't appear to have worked. But having said that, of course, with this U.S. leader, it's really impossible to take any statement he says either seriously or literally, because his subsequent actions could either be a very accurate reflection of what he said or the precise opposite. We saw that already in June, when in the midst of what both sides said were very constructive negotiations, a war was launched against Iran.
So what do you make of this launch, this second carrier group? You know, you can't help but think of Venezuela, when the largest carrier group, the USS Gerald Ford, was sent around Venezuela. The U.S. attacked and then abducted the Venezuelan president. What does it mean that a second launch carrier, in addition to the first, the USS Abraham Lincoln, has been sent to the Middle East?
Again, it's impossible to say. You could interpret this as either preparing for military action or seeking to increase the pressure on Iran in negotiations, which the U.S. would like to result in an agreement. I mean, either scenario is equally plausible. The danger here, since you referred to Venezuela, is that Washington, encouraged by Israel, is looking at Iran as a substantially weakened power. It has taken note of the widespread unrest in Iran last month, and has coming straight off the successful abduction of the Venezuelan president, may believe that it's just going to be one and done, and that there can be a limited, clean conflict with Iran. But of course, Iran is a very different kettle of fish than Venezuela. And Iran has already indicated that should there be a new armed conflict, it will observe neither strategic patience nor restraint or proportionality as it has in previous rounds.
In a moment, we're going to go to the Oscar-nominated filmmaker Jafar Panahi. His co-screenwriter, also nominated for an Oscar, has just been imprisoned in Iran. But I want to quickly ask you about the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu announcing Israel's joining Trump's controversial so-called Board of Peace. Trump initially proposed the board to oversee Gaza, but he now envisions it a much broader mission that critics say could undermine the UN. Trump's going to serve as the board's chair indefinitely and will have veto power over the board's decisions. He's asked countries to pay up to $1 billion for a permanent spot on the board. We have 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's the board of Trump, and inviting Netanyahu to join this is like putting the fox in charge of the hen house. It's the height of absurdity, and it's those who were initially ecstatic and euphoric about the Board of Peace, thinking it would only target the Palestinians in Gaza, who must share in responsibility for everything that's happening now.
Muin Rabbani, Middle East analyst and non-resident fellow at the Center for Conflict and Humanitarian Studies in Doha, Qatar. This is Democracy Now. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue to look at Iran, we turn to the recent arrest of Mehdi Mohammadian in Tehran, the co-writer of the Oscar-nominated film It Was Just an Accident by the acclaimed dissident Iranian director Jafar Panahi. Mahmoudian was arrested after signing a public statement condemning Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei. The statement also denounced the crackdown on anti-government protesters, saying the mass and systematic killing of citizens who bravely took to the streets to bring an end to an illegitimate regime constitutes an organized state crime against humanity. Jafar Panahi also signed the statement. I had a chance to speak to Panahi while we were both at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival over the weekend. I started by congratulating him on his two Oscar nominations for Best Original Screenplay and Best International Feature, and asked him what the nominations mean to him.
With everything that's going on in Iran, when this news broke, everyone was in such shock that we couldn't really think about the nominations. There had been a gruesome massacre. I had forgotten everything, and I was only in shock of what had happened. I was grieving.
Can you talk about the news that your co-writer for It Was Just an Accident has been arrested in Iran, that Mehdi Mahmoudian has been arrested?
Following the massacre, 17 of us published a statement. And in that statement, we held Ayatollah Khamenei responsible for what had happened. Mehdi Mahmoudian was also one of the co-signers of that statement. And it was because of that that they arrested him. Yesterday, they arrested one more person out of those 17 people, and a few of those co-signers are now in prison. I first met Mehdi in prison because he had spent 9 years of his life in prison. I knew that he had a deep understanding of different people in the society, and for that reason, I invited him to this film to help with writing the dialogues, because he knew the different characters of this film very well. Mehdi Mahmoudian was arrested at the same time as Abdullah Momeni, as Vidar Rabbani, and now we know that they're kept in very bad conditions. Mehdi and Abdullah Momeni are in cells of 17 meters by 17 meters, in which 30 prisoners are held. Those 30 prisoners are common prisoners held for crimes such as drug trafficking and murder and other crimes. And Ms. Vidar Rabbani did not accept to wear the veil from the very beginning, during the interrogations and during the detaining process. Therefore, they held her from her hair and they pulled her and they treated her very violently.
How did you learn of your co-screenwriter Mehdi's arrest?
I was in touch with him almost every day, and we were messaging. But the last message I sent him around 3:30 a.m. Was not even seen. And I started to worry a few hours later, and I started inquiring about him through friends. But then around 4 or 5 p.m. Iran time, I heard from BBC Persian that he was arrested.
How many times has he been arrested?
He has been in prison for almost 9.5 years, and he has been arrested for 8 times. Now we don't know how much prison sentence he's going to serve and how long he's going to be there.
And when you say you met him in prison, when you were in prison as well?
Yes,
when I first entered prison, he came and introduced himself and talked to me, and he was very kind to me. And then I saw that at any prisoner, every prisoner who enters, Mehdi does the same thing. He comes, he introduces himself, and he tries to help the prisoner not feel lonely upon entrance. And he would try to meet all the needs and necessities of that prisoner, regardless of what school of thought they belong to, what group they identified with, etc.
We are the acclaimed dissident Iranian director Jafar Panahi, director of the Oscar-nominated film It Was Just an Accident. He was interpreted by Shada Dayani. To see our interviews with Jafar Panahi, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show going back to Attorney General Pam Bondi's appearance on Capitol Hill Wednesday. This is Bondi being questioned by our next guest, Democratic Congresswoman Becca Ballant of Vermont.
And we now know that Lutnick went to Epstein's Island in 2012. How was that not a deal breaker for the president? And why aren't you asking questions of the Commerce Secretary about what he saw when he was at the island, which he lied about not ever going to? Why are you not asking these questions? And I see that my time is almost expired, so I will say this.
Shame.
Do the right thing, Attorney General. Meet with the survivors. They have been asking for a year. Meet with the survivors. Do the right thing. I yield back.
Gentlelady yields back. The gentleman from South Carolina is recognized for 5 minutes.
May I have 20 seconds of his time?
That'd be up to the gentleman, but...
Absolutely, Madam.
Thank you. Thank you. I was curious if you, Congresswoman, asked Bill Clinton that. Didn't see one tweet, not one. I didn't see one tweet when Joe Biden was in office about Bill Clinton. Didn't ask Merrick Garland anything about Epstein, not once. When he was
weak sauce.
And
weak sauce.
Also, I want the record to reflect that, you know, with this anti-Semitic culture right now, she voted against a resolution condemning.
Oh,
he
is Jewish.
Oh,
I just want to be clear. Do you want to go there, Attorney General? Are you serious?
To the gentleman
talking
from
about
South
anti-Semitism
Carolina.
To a woman who lost her grandfather in the Holocaust?
I reclaim my time.
After that exchange, Democratic Congresswoman Becca Ballant of Vermont left the hearing. She joins us now. This is Democracy Now! Thank you so much, Congressmember Ballant, for being with us. Explain why you walked out on the Attorney General, Pam Bondi.
So I walked out because, well, first of all, my time had expired and I needed to collect myself, quite honestly. And the thing that I want people to understand is I was there in that hearing really channeling all of what I've heard from the survivors in the multiple times that I've met with them. And I was just so disgusted that I had ended my remarks by saying, do the right thing, meet with the survivors. And she continued to make it about other things and other people. And her going after me personally like that was just too much because the survivors were sitting right there asking for her attention. Instead, she chose to accuse me of anti-Semitism. And in retrospect, as I've had time to think about that with my team, I think she did that because the Department of Justice had been surveilling us. And so she knew that the files that I had looked at were Secretary Lutnick. And I think she was going to try to go after my line of questioning by attacking me as anti-Semitic because Howard Lutnick is Jewish. And of course, they hadn't also done their homework about my own Jewish identity and my background. It was just heartbreaking to watch the Attorney General act in this way, especially when survivors have waited over the course of decades for justice.
Maybe she kept raising the issue of the Dow and that you should be happy that the Dow is up because of Commerce Secretary Lutnick, who, just to be clear for people, said his last interaction with Epstein was in 2005 when it came out in these Epstein files that in 2012 he went to his island with his wife and his four children and his nannies and friends to have lunch with Mr. Epstein.
That's exactly right. And what is so shocking, you know, as we have continued to go through the files, is just the shocking number of rich and powerful men who had no problem hanging out with a convicted pedophile, had no problem hanging out with somebody who was clearly involved in sexual abuse. And that was not, as I said in my testimony, that was not a deal breaker for the president. It was not a deal breaker for all of these men who continue to interact with him. And then ultimately for the Trump now to have three high ranking officials in his administration who clearly have ties to Jeffrey Epstein, and the DOJ is not asking any questions about that.
I wanted to go to two other issues, to ICE, but first to what happened this week. In its latest attack against LGBTQ plus people, the Trump administration's removed a pride flag from the historic Stonewall National Monument just down the road from us here in New York City. Stonewall becoming the first national monument to the gay rights movement following the 1969 Stonewall Rebellion. You're the first out LGBTQ plus person to represent Vermont in Congress. Your response?
So look, they're going after any community that changes their vision and their narrative of a straight white Christian nation. They have also removed multiple exhibits from the Smithsonian, and also was talking with a member yesterday about their removal of information about the Tuskegee Airmen. So this is horrible for my community, but we are not alone in this. And I think Americans have had enough, quite frankly. I don't think this is going to be a winning issue for him because they continue to cleave off from their coalition that won him the White House. They continue to cleave off all of these different communities that make up the fabric of America. And it's petty and it's mean and ultimately it's cruel. And they're not going to prevail. You're not going to be able to erase history. And I certainly am not going to let him do that. And I've raised the issue of protecting the rights of my community in every hearing that it comes up. And I'm not going to stop doing that.
I also want to ask you about the case of Pastor Stephen Tendo, an asylum seeker from Uganda who arrived in the U.S. in 2018. A resident of your state of Vermont, works as a licensed nursing assistant. Last Wednesday, he was arrested at gunpoint outside the medical facility where he works and is now in ICE custody in New Hampshire. He fled persecution and torture in his home country, but his asylum case was eventually denied. Earlier spent 2 years in detention at Port Isabel Detention Center in Los Fresnos, California, while pressing that asylum claim. Your response, what you're calling for.
So look, I just want to be clear with your listeners. What the president has created is a paramilitary force to terrorize communities of color in this nation and also immigrant and refugee communities. And they're not going after violent people. They're not going after the so-called worst of the worst in terms of violations of our law. What they're going after, the people they are going after, are hardworking members of their communities, people who have legitimate cases, whether it's an asylum case or, you know, the other thing that we've seen, Amy, and I don't know if you've talked about this on the show, we have seen at naturalization services as people come in the very last step of the process. They've done everything right.
You're talking about Mohsen Madawi, right? The Columbia student.
Well, certainly Mohsen Madawi. But the other thing is I have been at naturalization ceremonies in which we were expecting a certain number of people to be naturalized on that day. And the day of, they are told, no, you're not going to get your citizenship today.
We have to leave it there, but I want to thank you for being with us. Democratic Congressmember Becca Ballant of Vermont, vice ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. A happy birthday to Dante Torrieri. And I want to again encourage people to come out to our February 23rd Riverside Church 30th anniversary Democracy Now! Celebration with Michael Stipe and Wynton Marsalis, Angela Davis and Naomi Klein, the Pulitzer Prize winning poet Masab Abu-Toha, hooray for the riffraff, the Nobel Peace Laureate as well, Mary Oressa. I'm Amy Goodman. Get our tickets at democracynow.org.
WRCT Pittsburgh. It's more fun when it doesn't make any sense.
Recibí un mensaje de texto pidiéndome que apruebe una transferencia bancaria que no realicé.